speaking today with Anthony Robinson, who is a candidate for City Council in District D. Anthony, thank you for talking to me today. Why are you running for this office?
Thank you so very much for inviting me down. And it's my pleasure to have a chance to speak with you. I'm running for this office because there's some issues that are going to be presented to the City Council in the next election cycle that are going to have an impact on the district and the city for the next 20 years. And since I live in the district, and I have lived in the district since 1986, these issues and the impact they will have on the citizens, residents of the district, are pretty important to me.
Okay. Well, I mean, one of the things that you talk about in your biography is that you were wrongfully convicted and served time in the prison system before being exonerated. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
Well, that's one of the principal reasons why I'm concerned about what happens in the district. In 1985, I was discharged from the United States Army as a cavalry officer. I moved to Houston to start my life as a civilian. In 1986, just on Cullen, I was arrested for a crime I did not commit. I was tried and convicted and sentenced to 27 years in Texas Department of Corrections.
And keep going.
In 1996, I was discharged on mandatory supervision, and I worked for the next 3 years at whatever job I could, even though I had a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a certificate in computer technology, and computer programming. I couldn't get a job working as anywhere there was a computer. So I did odd jobs, manual labor, to save up enough money to pay for the DNA test. In 2000, we had the evidence tested, and I'm like, everybody's like so shocked. They're saying like, well, you didn't do it. I'm like, yeah, I've been saying this for 13 years, and now I see the same things happening right now in the district, and that kind of concerns me. The City Council has an opportunity to have a strong impact on the way policing is done in the community through conversations with the police chief. And so that's a principal concern of mine, because we need to find a way to make policing something other than just arresting everybody on the scene and having them fight their way out of it.
As you know, the city's crime lab has historically had some problems going back a decade or more. The mayor is currently in the process of forming a local government corporation to have the crime lab run independently. They just hired a director. They've got a board of directors. There's some stuff moving there. What's your view on this, on the way the mayor has moved the crime lab out?
In my opinion, that's a wonderful first step. If you recall, Josiah Sutton, 16-year-old boy from the district who was arrested and charged with a crime he did not commit, he was put in prison as a 16-year-old. And then as a result of fighting his case, it was discovered that the crime lab had mishandled, in some cases fabricated, evidence. That's a concern of mine, and that's something that City Hall can have an impact on. Guiding those kind of things, making those kind of decisions, and having the insight and the understanding of how important little things like that, that other politicians may not consider, but understanding that that has a direct impact on the lives and the quality of the lives of not only the people, but their children and those who would hope to live in the district.
Crime lab stuff, DNA testing, tends to get most of the attention in matters of innocence and exoneration. But of course, there are other issues having to do with police procedures, lineups, so on and so forth. What's your view right now of how HPD handles this sort of thing, and where do you think council should be pushing them to make changes?
As there was a huge discussion about a citizen advisory board to oversee some of the procedures and best practices of HPD and have some input on that. They do not have subpoena power, which is understandable at this point, but they do need to have a direct say on how some of the policies are implemented. For example, they've had some recent changes in the legislature that improved the photo ID spread. They no longer do it in the old way. They now do it the new way. And there's also issues about preservation of evidence and handling of evidence. That's critical in some cases, when evidence may make the difference between a person's life or death. You know, make no small bones of it. One day in prison could be a death sentence. And so now the next thing is with regards to police practices. Why? And this is something that's kind of important to me. Why is it important that a policeman will ride around the city on this beat and run license plates, as opposed to looking to see if they've seen signs of burglary, trespass, other criminal, visible criminal activity? You know, the plates are put on to identify the vehicles and make sure they're registered, not to find out who's in it. Because if the wrong person's in that vehicle, we now have a situation that could turn really bad, really fast, simply because the officer's looking for someone who he presumes to be in that vehicle. You loan your vehicle, I loan my vehicle freely if it's somebody I know. But another thing that's important is HPD has been using a video in their training session that I helped them put together with the help of Ryan Chen from the District Attorney's Office and Alicia and Brian. They put together a training video to help the police understand, the young cadets understand, everyone you drive upon or you see is not a criminal. They're a citizen. And until they have been convicted, they remain a citizen and their rights have not been given up. And they should be treated as a citizen with respect. And respect generally produces mutual respect. And then that way, a police contact can go through to its purpose. And that is to find out what the situation is, as opposed to, I've got my suspect. I just need to cuff him and stuff him. That's the wrong policy, especially in a district, because it leads to wrongful convictions, ruined lives, destroyed dreams. We can change that on the city council.
These are obviously very important issues, but there are other issues concerning District D. What do you see as the district's top priorities, and what, in addition to what we've already talked about, would be your priorities as council member in District D?
For me, the most important issue is public safety, because it has an impact on all the other issues that I hold to be dear. Public safety is most important. We have to make sure we establish and maintain a relationship of mutual respect between the police and the citizens. We have to work on making sure that we have adequate staffing for our first responders, our fire department, our EMS. But probably one of the issues that affect quality of life the most after public safety is the infrastructure. We have a drainage problem that is ancient, and we know that, and we have done nothing to fix it. I understand there's limited money. Rebuild Houston is trying to do that, trying to fix that. Worst first is a wonderful doctrine, but let's try to mitigate the problem that we have right now. We can lessen the flooding. We can redirect the water until we can get there to redo the sewers. Let's find out what condition they're in before we rip them out. We might be able to salvage some portion and then redirect those funds somewhere else in the district, for some other necessary repairs or maintenance issues. And the third thing is going to be, of course, quality of life, dealing with economic empowerment and economic development. The opportunities in the district are almost limitless because so many opportunities have been ignored and overlooked for so long. We have the possibility of development, infusing outside capital in, public-private partnerships, developing incubators for small businesses, and even encouraging small businesses. Palm Center was a wonderful idea, but it needs to be marketed as to be more than just a repository for government offices. We can bring in small businesses. We can encourage small businesses if we just change the way we think about District D. We can make a difference if we just change the way we think about it. It's not a blight upon the face of Houston. It's an opportunity for Houston to show how wonderful it truly is and how important District D is to Houston. One of the candidates made the comment that District D is the door to Houston, and it is. We have the medical center. We have Hobby. They're in the immediate area. We have all these wonderful opportunities. But we can't overlook the residents and the condition that they're living in if we intend to have Houston rise. It's the fourth largest, to be recognized in the world as an international city. You can't have this huge gaping hole in the middle of your city and pretend that no one sees it.
Well, parts of District D are undergoing, a certain amount of gentrification and, are hotbeds for development. But I'm thinking mostly along the Third Ward, along Alameda and places like that. Some parts, like maybe out in Sunnyside and along Cullen, less so. What do you see as being, what would you like to see done from the city's perspective to encourage development in District D, but also respect the existing neighborhoods and not price people out who've lived there for a long time? What do you want to see done?
That goes back to what we were talking about earlier, what I was talking about earlier about economic empowerment and economic development. We need to see more institutional investment in those regions. And I say institutional investments, you can count the number of banks that are in that area. Without banks, there's no funding for investment. With no investment, there's no development. That's not an empty hole. That's not a black hole in the city's economy. That is an opportunity for the right institution to say, we can see how we can partner with the citizens and the city and bring some development to this area. And again, that goes back to public safety. If people feel unsafe, they will not invest their money. If banks feel unsafe, they don't consider it to be a viable risk. We need to establish a relationship that will foster economic development, that we can do from economic empowerment, is understanding that you have the ability to make money. We just have to find the right combination of circumstances and opportunities and put you there. And the city can do that as well with regard to some of its set-aside programs. Okay. It's a phenomenal opportunity, and we need to move forward on it, and the city needs to be aware of it. And the citizens of District D, as well as other districts, need to see District D as an opportunity, not as a challenge.
Okay. Well, the city recently revised its development and density ordinances, Chapter 42. It's designed to encourage more dense development, not just in the inside the loop, but all throughout the city. What's your view of the changes made to Chapter 42?
Chapter 42 is going to change the... That's what we were talking about earlier. There's decisions that are going to be made that are going to change the face of Houston in the next 20 years. We may not recognize it 20 years from now. Houston traditionally is a single-family residential dwelling with a little front yard and backyard. As you increase density, you increase other impacts, not only in the community, but on the infrastructure as well. Now we got to fix the infrastructure, because we can't... You have a smaller footprint, but a greater impact. You increase the runoff. You increase the traffic. You increase the trash and refuse. You have to work on having a complete package, not just one package and then, oops, we got to go back and fix this. You have to give it some thought. You have to think about the whole picture, you know, and that's what I think. Chapter 42 will offer opportunities for development. But with those opportunities, we have to look at the other opportunities that need to go along with it. Improving the infrastructure. But we go back to improving the safety, public safety, because who's going to build a multiple dwelling structure if it's going to turn into a crime magnet? And that's one of the problems that we have.
Well, public safety is, of course, the biggest single component in the city's budget. What's your view of the city's financial situation and the way that they spend their money on public safety?
Public safety is vital to every citizen of Houston. Every citizen of Houston. And that goes back to the issue of policing. How are we spending that money? You know, are we spending money on to have officers ride around and run license plates? Or are we sending them out there to find crime? There's a difference between law enforcement and crime prevention. I mean, a visible police car will turn away a burglar. Well, if he sees one has someone pulled over for a traffic stop, well, now you've got these resources tied up. And you know that particular vehicle, that particular cop will not be patrolling the next two streets over. There's issues, and I'm making using it as an example. I'm not saying that's the pattern. But what I'm saying is, yes, public safety, the money needs to be there, but it needs to be spent. It's a smart public safety, smart on crime as opposed to hard on crime. One of the things I talked about earlier is crime prevention. You know, Houston, it was one of my, in the mayoral forum, the comment was made that Houston had the highest number of burglaries. Well, I think that's probably vehicle burglaries, including in that statistic. Well, be smart on crime. If you leave your iPad in the front seat and some guy's walking by, he sees it as a crime of opportunity. He doesn't know it's burglary. He just sees it as stealing. Well, why create that temptation? And I'm not saying you should be afraid to leave your things in your seat. But you have to look at not only the economic situation, but sometimes, you know, crimes just happen because you make it possible. If you leave your wallet on the table, you know, in a crowded restaurant, go to the bathroom and come back, you wouldn't do that because you know there's a possibility that somebody would take it. And the same thing comes with your personal goods inside your vehicle. That glass is not it doesn't protect it. It just makes it more difficult to get. And if someone's intent on taking it, they'll take it. And the same thing with our homes. If you don't have adequate lighting, the darkness is a burglar or a criminal's best friend. Let's do something about that. You know, there's certain measures that, in fact, that people can do, but the city can encourage. You know, I'm not McGruff the crime dog, but my point is we can slow things down by making it more difficult for the criminals to take advantage of us.
One issue that comes up in discussing the city's finances is the issue of the pensions. As you know, Mayor Parker has been trying to get the legislature to pass a bill to subject the firefighters' pension to meet and confer requirements as the police and municipal employees' pensions are subject to. She hasn't had much luck. The firefighters have been opposing it. Do you support the effort to get a bill passed to subject the firefighters' pension to meet and confer?
I'm going to leave that to Mayor Parker's reasoning. I understand what she's trying to do, and I believe if they have a package that is preferential to them, then the question needs to be asked, how did it come into being? Now, I understand we need to try to figure out how to balance this pension obligation in our current general revenue, the money we take in the general revenue. I understand that. But I also understand that we need to look at how we're spending the dollars we have right now. And though I may not be able to make the decision, I can make a comment on it. I can make some advisory statements. I can do help with some research. There's smarter ways to spend the money, and we might be able to take care of that offset. Might not need to change the pension fund. We might be able to readjust our budget and make sure the money that we're giving is being spent properly, that our resources aren't being wasted because it's just the way we do business. I'll give you an example, and I'm not picking on the policeman. You tell me why there's one traffic stop and four patrol cars when the guy's already in custody. I'm just saying. To me, that's a waste of resources. They could be patrolling. I understand you need to support the officer that has a conflict. But after the arrest is made, are we discussing the details of the arrest? He'll write a report. If you're really that concerned, you can read his report. I'm not picking on a policeman. I'm simply saying that there are ways that we could spend the money better with a little bit of, if we adhere to best practices. And again, public safety. We have a wonderful police force. Let's see if we can encourage them to be better.
Okay. One issue that came before City Council a few months ago was had to do with food trucks. The food truck vendors organized and petitioned City Council to change ordinances to allow them to operate downtown and also in the medical center, which current ordinances don't allow them to do. That wasn't any action taken at that time, but it's going to come up again. Do you support the efforts by the food truck vendors to allow them to operate downtown in the medical center?
The details of their petition I'm not aware of, but I strongly support any small businessman, any entrepreneur who's seeking to expand his business reach and to do so in accordance to the ordinances and regulations of the city. That's a wonderful thing. Cities grow because of entrepreneurs, and their efforts to grow should be applauded. There must be some, in my opinion, to a degree, whenever public safety comes into play, there must be some regulation and guidance. And so if the petition would provide for that, then I would support it. If it's, again, it's the economic empowerment and development of people, citizens, that's going to make Houston a more beautiful city, if there's such a word.
Okay. In 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in Houston that forbade it from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees.
Strongly against that. We need to provide whatever benefits that are necessary and essential and are commonly given to partnerships, universally without regard to gender, or whatever. The bottom line is, if a person's invested in a relationship and that relationship would provide them certain benefits, there's no reason in the world for the city or any other entity to interfere with those benefits.
All right. Well, you anticipated my question beautifully.
Well, I've actually had a client that came in and we discussed an issue about federal benefits, and I explained to them, I said, there's no way in the world that benefits would be denied. And I would not challenge it based on the fact that gender plays no part in the fact that this person is invested. We have a license, which means the marriage was recognized. And who is this? The government being the federal government, has no right to deny that license. They have to accept it.
All right. I'm asking everybody this question. Who are you supporting for mayor this fall?
At this point, it's still up in the air. I personally... This is my personal thing. This is just me personally. One of the factors that I considered when I was running for the seat is that it's open. Wanda Adams, the current council member, is barred by term limitations from running again. And so that means that this is a fresh start, a clean seat. I'm not running against anyone. I'm running for the seat. And I'm putting myself out there as a choice to the citizens of Houston. And I think that's, for me, I think that's the way that I would have approached it. Personally, I see the leadership of the city of Houston as being a very critical issue that the citizens need to consider very seriously. people ask me, you have no experience as running for government. I said, I'm not a politician. I have been referred to as a diplomat because I'm a lawyer and that I'm a mediator and that I find myself in most cases trying to find a win-win for everyone involved. I'm not contentious. I don't believe in this, drag them into court and beat them up kind of concept. I believe that my job is to keep them out of court, them being my clients. And so that being said, it's important to understand that you have to look at a situation and you have to weigh it, and you have to ask yourself, what are the pluses and the minuses? And more importantly, you have to look into that person's heart and ask yourself, what's there? When you look into a person's eyes, you can generally see whatever you see. But people always often say that the eyes are the windows to the soul. And you got to do that, and you got to make your own decision when you reach the voter's booth.
Okay. And when voters go to vote in District D in November, why should they vote to make you the next council member and not one of the many other people that are also running for this seat?
I personally believe, and I think that there are a few other people that believe I have the life experience. I have the perspective and broad breadth of understanding. I'm not talking very well today, but I have life experience. I have the breadth and the point of view that will offer new opportunities, new solutions to some problems, or new approaches to problems that have not been seen and that are not being offered by any of the other candidates. I believe that I actually prepared my CV here. I was going to let you take a peek at it. I'm not going to let you keep it. Just peek at it. That I have the training and the experience that would make me the appropriate leader for the district and a contributor to the city's guidance. I've been shaking hands in the community, and I would ask anyone that's shaken my hand to be able to tell anyone else, is he real or is he just a face on a piece of paper?
All right. Anthony Robinson, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.